on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Layover Podcast on the Lost End Network, where we interview travel leaders and talk to them about their careers, amazing travel experiences, and what they're looking forward to doing next. Today, we have Einar Garzoa, the co-founder and CEO of Conserve Safari. He's also a Forbes 30 Under 30 member and a regular contributor to the media on topics of ecotourism and development. Einar, thanks so much for coming on and chatting a little with us about the conservatism space, but how people can have a good time and embed themselves in some of these amazing, pristine wilderness environments, but also do it in an ecological, sustainable, and responsible way. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Dylan. Pleasure to be here.
All right. So let's maybe kick it off with a little bit of an origin story. So I know you grew up in Latvia. You're Norwegian by background. You know, tell me a little bit about, you know, your upbringing. Where'd you go to school? And what got you thinking about this world of, you know, ecotourism, or, and then how you blended that with the safari space?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Latvia. And so actually I spent most of my life in finance. So I wanted to be a private equity guy since I was like 10 years old.
That's ambitious.
I was very much into math, sports as well. And so eventually I studied in Stockholm School of Economics in Riga, which is good finance and economics school. After that, I worked in asset management, kind of like managing real estate, production assets, a little bit of renewables and waste management. And then I spent quite a few years in corporate finance, where kind of like I worked with the Big Fours, helped with capital raises, financial restructuring, financial management of the companies, which eventually led for me to build software for finance teams across the globe. So I was working with large enterprise, building their financial management tools, working with a lot of kind of like startups in the space, Andreessen Horowitz funded startups out of Silicon Valley. And then life just took a turn about 18 months ago when we moved to Africa.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. So look, you know, that's a hard pivot, right? Anybody who would look at your background would think that was, you know, a little unplanned or not on your, you know, your dance card or your trajectory. So was there an inciting incident either, you know, in your career or in your personal life or in just your philosophy and how you, you know, approach the world? Like what got you kind of, you seem like you're on a very specific path and this feels like a hard right. So tell me more about why you made this choice.
Yeah, sure. So when we moved to Africa, we're very close to sustainability business. So my wife and I have been involved in carbon credit business in Uganda, planting bamboo trees. And so we kind of like moved over to Africa with this business. And back then I was actually exploring like a finance idea. And I was pitching this idea to a few people. And then we made friends with one tourism person here. His name is Amos Vekesa. He owns safari lodges in Uganda. Right now I'm actually calling in from Kampala, capital of Uganda. And so he was telling me, hey, there's Tanzania. And I mean, this market is very exciting and you should explore it. And so I decided to join Amos on this trip. And actually the funny thing is that when we planned first travel with this person to Tanzania, I got malaria in Uganda. Oh, so we were hosting an investor trip and we went out to northern Uganda to show the bamboo plantation. And so I came back, I didn't even notice that I got bit by a mosquito. I got malaria, so I had to postpone that that flight. I drank kind of like the pills and to treat the malaria, and I managed to treat it in 3 days, and it was kind of like completely cleared. And so I thought, should I get rest and kind of like keep resting in Kampala, or should I just follow kind of like this little urge and to go over to Tanzania and see what's going on there? And then I did. kind of like reschedule my tickets, flew out the next morning, and then I went out to safari. I went out to Serengeti National Park, which is world famous safari park, and there I also met my current business partner Simon Mossy, and things really took on took off from there. And right now it feels like almost like homecoming, because actually my mother was an architect. My father, he's been involved in construction. He's a mechanical engineer. He used to build roads. He used to do a little bit of commercial real estate. And kind of like after spending so many years in finance and technology, kind of like coming back to this, this place of kind of like building things, building real estate. And also building it in places that are so intense in terms of wildlife experience and nature experience, that kind of all of a sudden clicked, and we really doubled down to make it work.
I love that. So, you know, I love that idea of, you know, kind of all this corporate experience and kind of building things, you know, moving decimal points around on spreadsheets and building software, things in the cloud. And now you're kind of thinking of this like roots that you have from, you know, your history with your family, of your dad being a commercial real estate developer and a builder of things in the physical world. And then, you know, taking this amazing opportunity to show people the wonders of nature in Africa and in a place like Tanzania. So, where did the idea for Conserve Safari come from, and how is it different than, you know, other safaris that, you know, there's like, I in the travel industry, I've been in the industry for about a year now, and safaris, both on the, you know, tour guide side of theaters, people that, you know, find people who want to go on safaris and then connect them with people like you who actually have infrastructure and tours on the ground, versus places that you can go. There's lots of options. So how do you guys position yourselves as different? And, you know, why would a traveler want to come on your safari versus, you know, some of the other ones that they might be able to go on?
Yeah, there's a bit of background for that. And so the primary idea is that we want to build spaces where people can find themselves. So people build spaces where people can find themselves through nature. And so kind of like when we think about luxury, it's actually kind of like we're trying to peel away all the unnecessary stuff so that the person is as close to the nature as they can be. Because that's where the magic happens. And so kind of like life has taken me through in different phases. And I must say, kind of like I found myself, kind of like my identity and kind of like my niche or my place in the world in mountains of Ireland. And I was up there by myself, completely kind of like in solitude, in very, very cold and rainy weather in Ireland. And I kind of like found myself there. And so when I came over to Serengeti and went on a safari, and I was so amazed about all this wildlife and this potential it can have on people who just go there. And so we don't attempt to kind of like transform people during kind of like their short stay in safari, but at least we attempt to initiate or inspire some sort of change within themselves. Because like when you go on a safari and you see animals, right? You see zebra, you see giraffe, you see lion, and zebra is zebra and giraffe is giraffe. They're not trying to pretend that they're someone else. And so we want to use this kind of like magical, this primal energy of Africa and wildlife to inspire kind of like people to find out a little bit more about themselves. And if we succeed, I mean, if that happens, then I know we succeed with something.
Yeah, I love that. You know, you're tapping into this very interesting travel trend. You know, it was originally documented in the movie Eat, Pray, Love with Julia Roberts, where, you know, travel is not just something that you do for entertainment. You don't just do it for relaxation and a vacation or an opportunity to take cool pictures and put them on your Instagram profile. you know, travel for a lot of people is transformational. It's meant to expose you and your family to different cultures, different ways of life, different perspectives that are other than, you know, your 360, you know, 350 days a year that you stay in wherever you live. Travel is meant to be an opportunity to show you that the world is bigger than what you think it is. And there are lots and lots of perspectives to be taken in. But also, I think you're hitting on an even different component, which is like travel can also not make you look out, but make you look in and really kind of, you know, put you in these environments, whether it's an opportunity to meditate or connect with your higher power or tap into something that is more introspective versus, you know, just the kind of the cultural experiences that people have. And you're saying that the best way to do that is to be able to experience these natural environments, but to kind of strip away all the access of like the things that don't really need to be there. So I haven't been on a safari myself, but what would you say are elements of other safaris that you feel are not conducive to this more introspective experience that you are trying to get people to go on when they travel with you?
Yeah, like I think you're absolutely spot on. And there was this SNL short clip where kind of like you feel bad in America, then, well, you need to go to Italy. And then when you go to Italy, you just feel bad in Italy. So that's what it's really about. And then you come back, right? And so there's nothing bad about Italy. I love Amalfi Coast. One of my most favorite places in the world is Amalfi and Positano. But kind of like when people come on a safari, it's not necessarily like absolutely comfortable or kind of like it's not necessarily leisure. You spend most of the day in a car. You cannot walk around safari in national parks. You might be killed by a lion. So that's a precaution. Mm-hmm. And so there's some discomfort related to it. And so when we build also our properties, we always stick to tented camps. So we build luxury tented camps. And so we want to kind of like bring some comfort to the bush, but we also want to keep canvas walls. So when they sleep, they can hear the lions. They can hear all the insects. They could hear some of our guests in Tarangire heard elephants just behind their heads, just behind the tent. And I mean, like you can feel scared, kind of like your sensory system is activated, and so it kind of like starts creating or triggers something within you, which is incredibly powerful. So,
yeah,
and so if. And kind of like there's, and actually that's where the idea of conservation comes from, is that all of this nature, all this wildlife is actually a huge gift for us as humanity, as people. And I mean, there are not that many places where we can go and experience this absolutely live wildlife. I mean, in the North, I mean, in Europe and in the United States and Canada, I mean, we can see some deer, we can see some fox, and usually they run away when they sense some closeness of people. But there you can see all those animals in the natural habitat. And so it's a big gift. And so kind of like our idea or philosophy about conservation is that we need to preserve that gift, because it will be incredibly sad if, I don't know, 150 years from now or 70 years from now, we would run out of elephants or lions would go extinct or cheetahs or leopards. And so we need to bring people on safari so that we can experience this gift, but we have to do it in a way that preserves this wildlife and nature for the next 1,000 years. So that's kind of like our philosophy about conservation and why we do it.
Yeah, I love that. So is the idea of how you do conservation, is it tied to, you know, your footprint in the safari camps that you're building? You know, like you mentioned, you're doing canvas tents, you're low impact on the environment. They're not permanent structures. They're not, you know, you're not cutting down wilderness and, you know, replacing it with buildings and structures. Is it the way that you build and set up these camps that make it, you know, more less intrusive on the environment, or is it that you partner with local conservation groups to help empower, you know, local communities to keep these spaces protected for longer and these species, or is it a little bit of both? But tell me how your model, you know, actually increases the opportunity to conserve these wild spaces versus, you know, maybe some other models, like obviously like the people that take folks hunting in Africa are probably the other end of it, right? Where it's like very destructive and negative. So tell me how your model is adds to the conservation effort versus detracts from it.
Yeah, and so there are multiple layers. So the first one is that is that we want to become we want to come up with a financially sustainable model to consistently fund conservation projects. So it's a business. Conserve safari camps and lodges, it's a business. And so we're in our first year. In 10 months, we built two properties. We're going through our first high season, and it already seems that we have achieved something sustainable. Wow. So we're profitable, we're growing, and right now we're looking for ways to add third property. And so we're kind of like actively also involving external partners and investors that want to kind of like accelerate this journey. How we want to do it is we want to start with ourselves. So we're training our staff members in conservation practices, anything from how to behave around animals, kind of like reducing the volumes, no music, proper waste management, kind of like instructing no feeding animals. When it comes to kind of like, garbage and waste, kind of like putting designated places where hyenas, it's typically hyenas, they would come and try to snatch something out of the waste. So they can harm themselves with some plastic. So kind of like these practices, we teach our staff members, and then we periodically audit them and test them, how good that they are, these practices. Then we, through staff, we want to also educate guests that come on safari. And we hope to inspire a little bit of conservation activities when they go back home. So it's not just about safari, it's about kind of like general kind of like consciousness about this gift of nature, and hopefully people can do it when they go back home as well. The next phase is obviously park fees. So Tanzania as a country has done really good job in preserving wildlife. I mean, 30% of Tanzania is national parks. And wow. So historically, how it's been set up is that Serengeti, Tarangire, Ngorongoro, kind of like this so-called northern circuit of Tanzanian tourism, is almost like a government's or Tanzania's. There's a TANAPA, which is Tanzania National Park Authority, is their cash cow, and so they use proceeds from these parks to fund also conservation and preserving other parks in southern parts of the country. So our objective is to be the biggest concession and license payer to TANAPA. And so historically, all of this budget went to TANAPA. Right now it's going in general Tanzanian budget, but still kind of like it comes back to TANAPA and preservation of the wildlife and nature in Tanzania. So we rely that on people who have done it for decades. We just want to bring more people so that they get more revenue so they can continue doing what they've done. And the third layer is dedicated projects directly with national parks. So we already are in touch with TANAPA and Ngorongoro Conservation Area about potentially purchasing equipment like night vision goggles, supporting them, obtaining additional vehicles for patrolling and ranger work. And then there's educational work. So they need support, transportation, kind of like logistics support to go and educate villagers who actually pose the biggest risk for poaching. Not anymore these white guys that come with guns and kill animals. It's actually people who are looking for survival, who do not know other means how to make income, or just kind of like plain negligence that sometimes lead to incidents. And so there's a lot of education educational work that is involved in educating people that live out just outside national parks. And so primarily being them, being that you need to teach them new ways how to make income so that they're not kind of like incentivized to use wildlife just to survive and kind of like feed their family. And I'm a big believer kind of like in productive solutions. I mean, you cannot just say, hey, don't poach. I mean, you have to, if you take something out, you have to replace with something productive. And so kind of like there are a lot of little things that we can do to educate them how to make alternative income.
Yeah, I know. I've seen programs or pieces on, you know, now there are park rangers that used to be poachers, you know, like programs that kind of convert them from, you know, this old way of doing things that was destructive and actually empowering those communities to be the stewards of the resources for the future. So that's really cool. I love that.
And so, on that note, we have, sorry, yeah, you know, we have one conversation going on with South African organization that actually has designed a program for kids to take them on a safari. So one of the properties in Serengeti is actually closer to a gate that is just kind of like closer to the border of the park. And so we would take these kids on safari and then show them actually the wildlife that is out there. And many of them have never seen it. And wow. Educate them, have some fun games, and just kind of like show the value of nature and bring these people closer to nature, and especially in young age. So when they grow up, they kind of like naturally inclined to protect what is there. So that is something that we hope to do next spring, hopefully.
Yeah, that's cool. It reminds me a lot of like the model of the San Diego Zoo here in San Diego. You know, they operate these two massive, you know, zoos, but San Diego Zoo is actually a nonprofit, and all the money that they get from, you know, people coming into the San Diego Zoo Park, Indito and in San Diego actually go to, you know, grants and conservation programs in Africa and other places around the country, or to preserve endangered species that they house at the zoo. So a lot of times it's like, how do you take these business models that are traditionally considered, you know, mainstream tourism, and how do you convert those into, you know, models that actually solve a ecological problem or a social problem? So I love how you're doing that. So can you, you know, you mentioned, you know, this moment in Ireland, you know, up in the rain and in the mountains, that was kind of like this transformational moment for you. I love that idea, and I want to just kind of dive deeper, because, you know, one of the things that I like to ask people is, you know, I love to hear about, you know, what are the favorite trips that you've been on recently, and where are you looking forward to going? But I think the idea of tourism and travel as an opportunity to create transformation, I think is an interesting one. I wonder if you would dive deeper on that. Tell me a little bit more about that story. You know, what were the circumstances that led up to you taking that trip? What was going on in your life that you felt like you needed to find that introspection? And, you know, what do you think about that experience was transformational, and how did it change you?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's one of the most important questions. And so, kind of like I don't want to go too far, but kind of like, yeah, what actually triggered kind of like, you know, that journey is actually hitting my goals. So I've always been like a goal setter. I hit like a financial, I mean, like I set up a financial target that I want to achieve. I hit it, then I set a higher one, I hit it again, and you do it multiple times, and then kind of like you hit the target, which basically satisfies your kind of like all external needs. I mean, good place to live, good family, my wife and kids, good cars, everything kind of like on the external world seems to be solved, but still there's something that is not solved. So kind of like that internal feeling when you go to Italy and still feel bad. And so it's actually not I realized that it's not actually not that much about kind of like what's going on in the external world, but actually your internal compass and your internal lens, what you use to experience that outside world. And so when this happened, when I kind of like hit my all my life goals, I started looking for ways how we can kind of like find peace with myself, and kind of like attending different retreats, educating myself, reading books, which eventually led to this trip to Ireland, which was actually part of a bigger retreat, only for men. That was men's retreat. And so we got to spend some time in nature, a part of all the other things we did there. And then eventually all things came up, came together as a puzzle. Kind of like you get something from the book, you get something from the conversation with another person, you get something from that, I know, activity or ritual. And then kind of like eventually you find your place in the world. And then kind of like I came to realization that the most important question that you might have is how do you essentially love the world? Mm. So how do you essentially, you know, bring yourself to the world? Which essentially boils down to what kind of gifts do you have that you can kind of like perfect or refine and master and bring to the world. And so I kind of like initially came to this realization, but I didn't have an actual practical way to express it until I found Safari, until I went on Serengeti. And then all of a sudden, kind of like this practical part of this inner feeling, how do I want to express myself in the world, came together. And so that's why I'm very serious about what we're doing here. We're really not messing around, because this is like extension of ourselves. We're three partners. It's myself, and my Tanzanian partner Simon Mossi, and my friend American Latvian Jan Skokainis, who lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. And so this business is very personal extension of ourselves. And so it's great that kind of like, yeah, the money and the business and all of that is there, but essentially we're just trying to do the best that we can to the world. And this is kind of like our way of doing that, if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. You know, it's you come across this story often of, you know, successful people. You know, you talked about, you know, kind of the trappings of like, you know, like I've found that financial happiness is when you have enough money to not worry about money. You know, anything above and beyond like taking care, like not having to worry about money, is just like, okay, I can like you said, buy an more expensive car, buy a bigger house, buy multiple houses. But you know, that first kind of like major jump into like happiness and freedom is when you go from like not having to like look at the checkbook and manage things, and then going to like, okay, like I can kind of just do what I want to some degree now. And everything above and beyond that is kind of like less incremental happiness with the more that you are investing into like superficial things. And I love the idea that, you know, when you went on this kind of your own moment of like, you know, I call it the eat, pray, love moment, you know, essentially traveling to find inspiration, or like, what is life's purpose, or what is your purpose as an entrepreneur, as a man, as a father, et cetera. You did that through a retreat, which is essentially like travel with a purpose, with it, like with an intention and an outcome, and wanting to like figure out a question or answer a question. But I love the idea that you did it like also in community. Like it wasn't about just going to Ireland and like walking up a mountain with no intention and hoping that this
thought. I tried that as well. I went on a solo. I went on a solo silence retreat to German Alps.
Wow.
So I tried that one as well. That's but I awesome. Must say, it, as part of the community, it's more powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. No. I mean, that makes sense to me. And you know, I think like, you know, you read a lot of stories right now about like female solo traveling, or like, you know, traveling with a community, or traveling with like same sex, you know, like not having the distractions of like worrying about, you know, the other sex and like hooking up and dating and like really like being intentional about what you're focusing on. So it's like travel was the travel was the modality that helped you discover, you know, your next chapter in life. And then I love that once you figured out what you wanted to do, or what you figured out what was important to you, travel also became the answer and the solution to providing this experience for other people. Yeah,
and that's where we want to also differentiate with Concert Safari. I mean, right now it's pure safari. We're accommodation provider. Our main customers are tour operators. Kind of like going forward, we want to also venture in this segment where we're gonna build a wellness tent or wellness space. And so initially starting with a little bit like more plain vanilla, where you combine yoga and safari. So do half day yoga for women's groups and then go on safari. So have a little bit of content there.
And then over time, go
a little bit deeper, kind of like bring in some content, actually how you can soak this, all of this nature that is around you. How can you experience it, learn about it, and use different techniques to use the power of nature to learn more about yourself. So I think there's a lot to do in that segment. Right now, almost no one does it in Tanzania. Not that I'm aware of. I think there are some people that do it in South Africa in that direction. So I think there's tremendous potential, and hopefully people are gonna kind of like enjoy it and like it as well.
I think it's a great idea. My wife's a yoga teacher, and you know, she loves yoga retreats, and I know a lot of people who love to travel and do yoga, and you know, or you know, just travel in general for their passion, right? So for me, it's, you know, going on surf trips, and for my wife, it's going on yoga retreats. So I think the more often that you can add in like those multi-dimensional reasons of why people travel, you know, something where, you know, the kids can be entertained and the parents can go do something separately, or like great food and just being able to be educated and take in culture, but then like adding the wellness element. So the more of those things you can kind of cross off of people's checklists, I think the more you become like a must visit place, because you establish all these different elements of what makes them a person and why they travel. I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned you have the two lodges so far. What is the criteria that you use to consider launching the next location? Like, what are the things that go into calculating that? You know, tell me a little bit more about the process and how you choose a new location to develop another lodge.
Yeah, so when people go on safari, they usually stay in multiple places. It's not just about staying in one place. They want to experience different places. And so we built first property in Serengeti, which is a world famous park. You're never going to be disappointed. You're always going to have great animal encounters. Then we built a second property in Tarangire, which is on the way to Serengeti. So Tarangire is closer to Arusha, which is like a tourism hub or gateway town when you come to Tanzania. So you usually spend a night there, then you go to Tarangire, spend one or two nights, and then you go to Serengeti. But when you go to Serengeti, you stop in Gorongoro Conservation Area, which is the 2-million-year-old volcano crater, where you can find safari animals inside the crater, also lots of them. And so you usually stay there as well, at least one night. And so our objective is to close the circuit, so to have a kind of like location each of these places. And I mean, when it kind of like when we identify the park or kind of like general location where we want to be, then I've prepared a list of kind of like how do we assess the quality of the exact location. And usually it's kind of like proximity to the main road, because you always need to kind of like go to the next place where you come from the previous place. And if it's very far out, like 2-3 hours out, it's usually a deal breaker. Then we always look for something interesting that is there in the nature. In Serengeti, we have kind of like a view on a massive plain where kind of like elephants and giraffes walk in front of the tents. In Tarangire, we're by a seasonal river, and you have a view from the tents on seasonal river, and the elephants on the other side. And we tend to look for something that is memorable in that place. But I mean, quite often you are assigned a concession or a license and you have to take that place. So that's one of those things. Yeah, but kind of like these elements of convenience to maintain that place, and also that is something special to people. Those are the primary considerations. Yeah.
Got it. So you're really, what you're establishing is a network almost of like places where people can go on a safari tour and visit multiple of your locations on the same trip, not being too far away from each other, and kind of having these iconic anchor features that are, you know, something that people would want to see.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's kind of like the usual experience when they come on safari. Yeah. We want to match that with our clients, which are tour operators as well.
Got it. All right. So, you know, you've mentioned being a very goal-centric person, you know, in your past life as a financial operator and in the various roles that you've had in setting personal goals and exceeding them in the past. Do you have a way that you measure impact from your conservation efforts? How do you quantify what you want to achieve through that? How do you create the metrics for success, and any stories you want to share so far from your experience in the two locations?
Yeah. So how we try to quantify is kind of like the monetary terms is the easiest. So basically how much we pay in park fees is number one. Probably the second one is how much of proceeds we allocate to conservation projects. That's going to be one of the metrics that we track. One of the immediate ones is probably also our team educational activities. So what are the scores of the audits, quarterly audits that our team members score based on the trainings that we provide? And then I've been thinking about also kind of like maybe tracking how many guests have been educated, but I would probably assume that most of them will. Or we're going to at least try to provide the materials in camps. and also about the number of villagers that are around national parks. We hope to kind of like grow those metrics, kind of like help to bring more people through these programs. And I've been thinking about kind of like the general statistical metrics, kind of like country level stats. That data is not necessarily great. And Tanzania has done a lot to improve general statistics. But for instance, like poaching is not resolved. Like in Uganda, there's a national park, which is called Murchison Falls. And their rangers collect 150 kilograms of snares every week.
Wow.
So I mean, we still have some work to do. And so hopefully over time, as we get kind of like more experience and better at this, we can come up with better metrics. Kind of like those would be the primary ones. Quantifying is important.
I love that. So looking ahead to the future, where do you see Conserve Safari's role in kind of the general Africa conservation and tourism landscape? Where do you guys want to be in 5 to 10 years? What is the master vision?
So the master vision is essentially to grow our presence. And so kind of like we want to get it right, kind of like the practices that we have in place, kind of like both facing the customer, also facing the nature and national parks. And once we got it right, we want to scale it to additional locations. So we're thinking of 35 locations over the next 5 years. So there's a lot of growth. And yeah, and so we want to realize this vision where we want to create spaces where people can find themselves. And kind of like our approach to it is basically designing places that are refined, that are intuitive, that are kind of like bring you closer to what is out there, and then also educating people in the process. So that's the grand vision. So, but we kind of like take it step by step. So it was important for us to finish one property last year, finish two properties by this high season. And once we achieve kind of like small milestones, we course correct and we figure out the next steps.
Love it. Love it. All right. So, you know, you've been on these transformational trips in the past. You are building a destination that's meant to be transformational. Is there anywhere else on your bucket list that you have in mind that you want to go? Is there a trip that you want to take when you go on vacation now? Since you live in a transformational setting, I imagine you probably have to get out of that and go somewhere else in order to have that same experience. So what is on your bucket list of transformational experiences that you want to go on in the future?
Yeah, I did one of those trips over the summer. I went home. So yeah, when I came in Africa, yeah, in Tanzania, pretty much like last year, August, I spent like 10 months just building without going anywhere. Just really, just to national parks. I didn't go anywhere.
Wow.
And then I went home and it was a massive transformation again, because it was after such a long kind of like intense period of time. So going home is always a great thing, especially of a longer kind of like journey. But I'm really keen to go into Zanzibar. I want to go to Zanzibar. Zanzibar is part of Tanzania. It's a nice island in Indian Ocean, right next to Tanzanian mainland. And it has these gorgeous Indian Ocean beaches and white sand and this blue-green water. So I was there kind of like, I was there a while ago. So would wish to come go back there as well and take my kids there. So my kids still haven't been to our lodges. So I'd love to show them these places that we build and also take them to the beach to play with sand a bit. They're still young.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I remember during COVID, before I got into the tourism industry, I had a conversation with an operator in Africa. I forget exactly where they were, but they told me about, you know, that part of the tours that they offer are they take Westerners to places where Westerners have never been. Africa is kind of one of those only places still probably in the world where there are places in Africa that no Western person has ever set foot on. What do you think about that trend? Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think that's a bad thing, or do you think that's an interesting place to explore?
That is an interesting place to explore. but actually, Westerners have been in most places, also in Africa. I mean, when you think about these indigenous tribes, some of these tribe members, they don't speak English, but they have TikTok accounts. So they're fairly famous. Fairly famous. Yeah. But I'm sure there are a few tribes that are completely online intact. But I believe that there, sorry, I believe it's okay. That there is something. I believe that there is something. Kind of like also part of this segment about kind of learning more about ourselves. Kind of like when you go back to something that is very traditional, that hasn't been evolved or touched by Western society, then you can actually see it's almost like where it all started. I mean, what are the basics of kind of like human behavior, interaction between, I don't know, men and women, interactions within societies. So that kind of like going in these very primal places, either to tribes or just in nature, I think that can be highly revealing. So that would be a very, very interesting exploration.
Love it. All right. Einar, it's been fascinating to talk to you and to learn more about what you're building. As somebody who has not visited the continent of Africa yet, this is on my bucket list of things to do. So I'm going to keep you guys in mind, as I, you know, plan my first safari. I feel like you have a great idea of how to do it in a way that, you know, most travelers who are looking for that transformational experience, that wellness experience, that, you know, ecologically responsible experience, it seems like you guys are building something that's very on trend and will have a huge market for, and will do things the right way. So super excited that you were able to come on to the show and share a little bit with the audience about what you're building. If our travelers want to learn more about Conserve Safari or connect with you, we have a lot of industry partners as well, tour operators, online travel agencies, et cetera. Where would you like to point the audience to learn more and connect?
Yeah, well, we're on Instagram and Facebook. So our tag is conserve_safari, Conserve Safari. And then we have website conservesafari.com. And so we're very close to these profiles. So we're like one step away from the contact. And I mean, you're very welcome on Safari. Tanzanian word for welcome is karibu. So karibu on Safari, and yeah, we'd be happy to
take it. Let's go. Well, I'll be in touch for sure. All right, Einar, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll be in touch again soon. I'm sure we'll stop back in and see what you're doing in the future. Thanks again.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Cheers. Bye-bye.